Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. I guess this is going to be podcast 364, which is kind of an update for your Monday. I started out tonight kind of not planning on doing a podcast because I am out on the deck. I got the tiki torches lit. I've got an origami fire in the grill. And it just is such a... I made a fabulous dinner. I made a steak dinner with green beans, with bacon in them, and butter, and a salad, and I just had a great pot of coffee. It's been a great day. We had a thunderstorm tonight. That was pretty cool. And I'm sitting out here on the deck just thinking, well, I wasn't going to do a podcast because I just didn't... I wasn't sure my heart was in it, and then I thought... Well, it is Sunday night, and, you know, it's always hard to go back to work on Sunday night when everybody is... But anyway, it's close to midnight, so it's time to do a podcast. Well, you've heard me talk about xgovernmentcars.com on the Bob Davis Podcasts for years. I have had... actually, if you include the podcast ambulance, I have now had 4 ex-government cars. And, you know, I started out was... The idea was I needed a good, cheap car to drive back and forth to Chicago. People always say, why do you buy those cop cars? That's now the big question. Why do you buy? Because they're great, reliable cars. And, you know, I bought the first one. It was a 2000 Crown Vic. I guess it was in 2003 or 4 or 5. I don't know. I've had 3 since, and now the ambulance. And here's the deal. If you want dependable transportation that's fun, you definitely should check out xgovernmentcars.com. And they are having a grand reopening event. It's on now. X-Government Cars, first of all, has nicer, newer vehicles. That includes Chargers, Impalas, next-gen 4s, Fords, plus trucks, vans, and SUVs. And when I'm talking about next-gen Fords, I'm talking about the new Ford Police sedans, which are amazing. But the other thing is they have great financing deals for all levels of credit, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. Everybody gets approved. XGovernmentCars.com only carries 1 owner, professionally maintained government and fleet vehicles. And with other people selling these vehicles these days, it's good to know because you never know what you're getting at these other dealers. So let's review. Cash deals direct from owner Ed Johnson himself. A 3-day satisfaction guarantee. If you don't like the car, you can bring it back. Financing for all levels of credit. And you apply online safely and securely 24/7 at xgovernmentcars.com, or you can go check them out at 2420 Nevada Avenue North, Golden Valley, Minnesota. The grand reopening event is on now. Everything is better at, and even though it's midnight, I did bring the bullhorn out, so here we go. xgovernmentcars.com. So let me put a couple more pieces of, there's a lot of branches and stuff down, which is great, so I'm going to put a couple more pieces of wood on the fire, and then we'll get started. Kind of started out the podcast that way. This is going to be a very informal podcast. So I'm going to start out by talking about something that happened to me this weekend that I thought was great. I think it was Friday night. Was it Friday night or Saturday night? May have been Saturday night. I didn't have anything going on, and so I went to yoga, and then I went to my favorite Asian restaurant. And it is here in the town where I live. And I went down there, and I've been going to this place for a long time, and I've gotten to know the people that own it and the people that work there pretty good. And so we were sitting around talking as I was eating, and then after, and somebody said, "Hey, we're going to go to a bar after work. Why, you should come." So I was like, "Yeah, maybe I will." I was kind of tired, so I came back, and I don't know what I did. I think I made coffee, and then I thought, you know, it's Saturday night. I'm going to go hang out. So, and I haven't done that in a long time. And I love people who work in restaurants because they're tons of fun, always fun. So I met these ladies down at a bar in, and some of you from the North Metro will be familiar. Is it Wild Bill's? I think it's Wild Bill's. And it's the weirdest place because it's a sports bar, but then they do this weird dancing thing. It's the craziest. I've talked about it a couple times. It's the craziest collection of people I think I've ever seen. And it really reflects kind of a weird sort of diverse community in the North Metro, which is, and this is, you know, these are relatively young people, although there are some older people in there too. So it's not just that, but it's Mexicans, West Africans, I assume they're West Africans, they're immigrants from Africa, regular old everyday Americans, young and old, from all different walks of life that come together to dance. And I don't know why it is that Wild Bill's is the place where everyone goes. Maybe somebody can enlighten me. I know that when I went up there with my friend Michelle and her husband, it was her birthday, and they have some kind of a huge birthday dinner. But last night it was just two of the ladies that work at the restaurant and one of their friends. So she hadn't been out in a while, and she proceeded to get drunk. One of them got really drunk, and she started questioning me. and it was really an interesting, I mean, sometimes people ask the most interesting questions about what I do, and they don't even know how interesting the questions are. And she said something like, why do you do what you do? Why do you do what you do? And of course, she was really drunk. So the question, and I thought I'm going to do an update podcast, and I will get to some updates, but you know, you say out of the mouth of babes, let's say, the mouths of babes or people that don't know anything often ask the most, again, the most insightful questions. And I thought to myself, well, I started to answer the question with the typical, I started doing radio when I was 13, and she didn't want to hear that. She really pressed me hard for why do you do what you do? What's with you, and why do you do what you do? And she wouldn't let go of that. And, you know, it turned out to be a really hard question to answer. And so I've been thinking about that. Really, I've been thinking about that question since last night. It's Sunday night, and it was about, it was last night at about this time that question came up. And, you know, I've been kind of mulling that over in my mind for quite a while. Why do I do? And I think it's a good question. Why are you doing podcasting? First, it started out with, why are you doing conservative radio? And, you know, I always hate that because I hate these labels. Yes, I started doing conservative talk radio, so-called conservative talk radio. I don't think that it was conservative talk radio when I started doing it. It was just talk radio. And there were all kinds of different people in talk radio doing all kinds of different things when I started doing talk radio. It's only toward the end of the arc of talk radio. And notice I say the end because I really think talk radio is dead in this country and for precisely this reason, and that is it became ideological. And I hear this a lot. She was saying, well, you know, this person in my life is conservative, and this person in my life is conservative, and this person in my life is liberal. And we're back to these labels that are often applied to people, which I refuse to be labeled. I don't want to be put in a box. You're conservative, or you're this, or you're that. I don't know what I am. And I don't like these labels because I don't think that they mean much of anything, as will be witnessed by at least a couple of the stories I'll talk about tonight. You know, I started out with the whole, description of my experience in radio. This is what I do. I do communications, and I do sound, and I do this. This is what I do. But I become, a pretty strong supporter and evangelical supporter of podcasts. So, you know, if you said, what's the mission of podcasting? For me, it's, first of all, it's proving that podcasting is a viable and strong and ultimately a better alternative to broadcast radio, especially when it comes to talk about issues, because of several reasons, not the least of which is the fact that you don't have to keep hosing down issues day after day, hour after hour, because you put out a podcast and it's done. You know, I don't have to keep talking about Baltimore because I did a podcast about Baltimore. If you want to know what I think about Baltimore, go back and listen to that podcast. I don't have to do podcasts over and over and over again, hour after hour, talking about the economy, because I just did an economic podcast. And if you want to know what I think, you can listen to it and draw your own conclusions. Those things, you know, in my opinion, don't change too often. So You don't have to be a broken record. And that was one of the things that I used to get so tired of in radio, was having to do another hour on the same damn thing over and over and over again. So as a viable alternative, podcasters can do as many podcasts as they want or as few podcasts as they want on a particular topic. I was really surprised yesterday and today when I was going through doing my scanning of news stuff, that a lot of the stuff I said in the Baltimore podcast ended up on the commentary page of a lot of newspapers in this country, you know, at least in the aggregated sites that I look at over the weekend. And I was surprised that so many, and by the way, not all the opinions were shared with, you know, on one side of the fence. I read stuff, conclusions that I came to, and I don't harbor any illusions that these people are listening to the Bob Davis podcast, although I do have a lot of hits from Washington and particularly the Capitol, so I don't know. But it's great to see thoughts that you have show up in the commentary section of newspapers a week or two later. So one of the things that's great about podcasting is if you listen to them when they're new, you're going to hear stuff that you're probably going to hear later repeated by other people, whether grapevines think alike or whether they actually listen to my podcast or somebody else saying similar things. So that's kind of cool. That's one of the things I like about podcasts, and it's one of the reasons I do this. The other thing is I think that podcasts are really, I want to prove that podcasts will work as well for the advertisers of podcasts. There's a big debate in the podcasting community these days about whether podcasts should be subscription supported or advertiser supported. And, you know, a lot of the people I talk to are former radio people, and they're coming to the conclusion that advertiser supported podcasting is probably the way to go. The question now is, how do we make that possible? Which is a whole nother podcast. In terms of, you know, you have to know how to sell and you have to know who you're selling to and everything else. So to answer why do you do this, you know, I'm kind of on a mission to prove that this medium, digitally delivered audio on demand, is really superior to FM radio in terms of talk and clearly superior to AM radio in terms of talk. You know, you guys have listened to my podcast about radio and what talk radio became, and it's too reliant on callers. And, you know, when it started out, there was no Facebook, there was no social media, and talk radio was kind of social media, and to that extent, it was more fun, and now it's a caricature of itself. So you don't have to keep hosing down issues. And more importantly, I don't want to be a part of this whole thing in this country where we get people upset about today's outrage and nothing ever gets done. And I don't care if it's local issues or if it's national issues. The thing that seems to be going on in all forms of broadcast media, even the stuff that's on cable, is let's get people really, really, really upset. And then where do you go from there? Like, what do you do after you get people really, really upset? What do they do after they get really, really upset? And these issues, whether it's economics or Baltimore or foreign policy or, you know, things like the Met Council, when you're talking about local stuff in Minnesota, podcasts I've done about, you know, I did that whole thing about Minnesota politics. They tend to be really complex, and people do not understand or want to think about the complexity. So they'll say, I'm a conservative or I'm a liberal, and that kind of explains it. It's almost like it's an orthodoxy. And that is what is driving the country apart, because people believe in an orthodoxy whether they are part of that orthodoxy or not. So I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat or I'm a liberal or I am a conservative. Meaningless terms today when you start looking at the complexity of many of these issues facing the country. There is no easy answer to the Baltimore problem. And I think I said that a couple of times. There is no easy answer to urban development problems. And this is another theme that I really want to hit in the podcast. Another reason I'm doing this is as technology gets more and more and more, moves forward faster and faster and faster, there's going to be problems that are going to outstrip anyone's ability to cope with them as they go. I just read a story about how driverless car technology, not driverless cars, but the technology that allows cars to be autopiloted, basically, is rapidly overtaking the quote-unquote law. This, of course, was in a Star Tribune article, and I don't know whether somebody at the paper wrote it. It sounds like something they would write. Oh, God forbid, you know, technology is outstripping law But that is what is happening. And that's what always happens when you have technological industrial revolutions. The inventions outstrip the ability of governments to deal with it for a while. And that's actually a good thing. And, you know, there's several new cars. Cadillac has a new self-driving technology. Volvo, and there's Audi is coming out with one. And of course, Tesla will have a fully self-driving car supposedly in the next few years. So government is really not prepared. They're saying that they're outlawed, but they're selling cars with this technology as we speak, depending on how much you have to spend. Certainly older cars don't have it, but we have cruise control, right? We can always say we have cruise control. So I think that's another one of the missions, is to let people know about that. But the main thing is to do what I do, which is I read a lot of stuff, and for some reason it allows me to start connecting the dots and to say, hey, this is something to look out for, and this is something to think about, and that's what these podcasts are for. I'm not going to sit here and pound on, if I pounded on this table, it would sound like a rocket, so I'm going to leave that alone. But I'm not going to sit here and pound on my knee and scream and yell and be upset and talk about how it's the end of the world and everything else. I've just traveled all over the country in, you know, podcast mobile command. I'm going to be going back out again relatively soon. And the one thing that I can tell you is that the country is not falling apart. You know, there are certainly areas where the country is challenged, where there are problems. We certainly have economic problems, but nobody is out there looking around, talking to people, and coming to these conclusions that, hey, you know what? Life goes on. People go to the lake. People, you know, spend time on their deck. People, whether they're employed or not, life is going to go on. So, you know, I think that's really, really, really important as well. I guess the question of why do you do the podcasts is, you know, why are you still doing this? This is what I do. It's what I've always done, you know, express myself in some way, shape, or form. And I'm really, really excited about this new medium, really excited about welcoming people from Blog Talk Radio, for example, that are now starting to listen to the podcasts who were never exposed to them before, or going places and having people see the mobile command unit with the, you know, the banner on the side of it, writing it down, looking up the URL, and then saying, wow, you know, this is an interesting podcast. Who else talks about the Donner Party, let's say, or who else talks about some of the things that you're talking about? So it's a great opportunity, and not just for me, but for all kinds of other podcasters, and the more the merrier, to bring more people into this medium, and people will soak up as much content as is put out there. So I promised I would do some updates so people can get their Monday going, but I just want to say that I'm actually thankful for that question that was asked of me. And you know what's great is I'll keep thinking about that. So what is going on? This was a weekend in which supposedly three more, how many candidates now do we have on the Republican side? And the national Republican strategist keeps saying that this is a really great thing because it shows that the Republicans have all the diversity. I think that Republicans are going to make the same mistake that they made in 2008 and again in 2012, and that is having too many candidates. And the reason that there are too many candidates is I think partially there is so much money that's available for people to run for president. And I said derisively the other day, I think a lot of these people that are running for president do so because it gives them a constituency and it makes them famous and it gives them an ongoing platform as well as a way to make lots and lots of money. The latest is Carly Fiorina, who is basically stealing a page from Elizabeth Warren's book by saying that she's going to run against crony capitalism. And she said that what has happened is that the political class is out of touch. I've certainly said that. And I think more than anything, Baltimore proves that. But it's just weird that she would have picked that tack as a Republican. That is an indication of the fractured nature of the so-called conservative voting base. Martin O'Malley, who is a Democrat, announced this, is planning to announce, if he says he's going to run, he will announce in Baltimore. Baltimore, and his big contribution is we don't have an agenda for America's cities since Jimmy Carter. And this is, you're going to be hearing this a lot, that it's all about infrastructure, that our the problems in this country can be solved through infrastructure. I hesitate to point out we had nearly a $1 trillion stimulus package, which was designed to build infrastructure and other quote-unquote shovel-ready projects all over America. And many of those projects in America's cities, I don't think that you can say that we haven't paid attention to America's cities. There's been hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars put into America's cities. What happened to it? And I think that's a really important question. So Martin O'Malley is not necessarily talking about anything new. And then we have Ben Carson, who has a very strong evangelical constituency, and Mike Huckabee, who has a very strong evangelical constituency. There's talk of Rick Santorum competing for that same vote. And I hesitate to suggest that what's going to happen when these people get to these the debates is going to be more really pure comedy of 18 or 20 Republican candidates on a stage battling it out for 1 or 2% of the vote. Who is that going to benefit? That's going to benefit the Democrats if they have one candidate they've already chosen, whether it's Martin O'Malley or Hillary Clinton or Elizabeth Warren. But it's really going to benefit Jeb Bush because it's going to make him look like the only real viable candidate in the bunch. And Republicans seem to think that this is a really great thing, having all these candidates, because it shows diversity. I will reserve judgment. You know, my fear is that it's going to make the Republicans look like idiots because many of these people really aren't ready to run for president. And far be it for me to say that you can't run for president. I'm not saying that, you know, somebody should be deciding who runs for president or not, but I'll reserve judgment on whether or not this worked out or not. You know, maybe this time, maybe after November of 2016, I'll say, boy, that turned out to be one of the smartest things Republicans could have done, but I'm not counting on saying that. I think having this many people this early, quote unquote, running for president on the part of the Republicans is a big mistake. I was stunned to read this weekend that George Soros actually owes the U.S. government $7 billion. This after he is the chief make-the-rich-pay-more-taxes guy, and he has for years avoided paying taxes by moving companies and by following and jumping through loopholes to avoid paying taxes. Here's another guy who rails against the rich. Warren Buffett's another one, rails against the rich and then lives off of subsidies or doesn't pay his taxes. He owes the United States government almost $7 billion. Talk about crony capitalism. And then, of course, this is definitely something, and I haven't talked a lot about the Hillary Clinton thing because I don't want to talk about Hillary Clinton because I think that all this talk about Hillary Clinton actually benefits the Clinton effort to make the former First Lady and Senator from New York President of the United States. But I have to mention that the Clinton Foundation continues to be featured in one crazy story after another of the Clinton Foundation absorbing, now this one is absorbing millions and millions of dollars in government funding and also, obviously, international grants to do things. And, you know, the charity has stopped telling people about, they've stopped disclosing their contributions. And this new book about Hillary and the whole question of whether or not there was influence involved with the Clinton Foundation, or whatever it's called, the Clinton Initiative, or whatever it is, I think, really important. I just want to mention to everyone, first of all, this is crony capitalism at its best because it's all done through charities. And there's going to be a lot of talk about crony capitalism, but they're going to miss the fact that this is the biggest crony capitalist operation in the business. This is a giant scam, the Clinton charities effort, in my view. I think one of the reasons that this is so publicized right now is because the Clintons are making every effort they can to have this blow up now so that it's old news when she actually runs for president. So when the campaigns start in earnest in the summer of next year after the conventions, if she gets the nomination, she can look back on this and just say, well, we went through this last year and it's old news. So talking about it, I suppose people should know. I guess I was always dubious of the Clinton Foundation. I think Bill Clinton just cashed in post-presidency. Remember, they were bankrupt. And this was their way to cash in. And it's to me, it's rather disgusting, especially since he just won't yield the stage. He just cannot let go. And I'm afraid that Barack Obama will do the same thing. If he doesn't, he won't join the Clinton initiative, but he'll have his own. So get ready for that. And then we get to subsidies. I mentioned Warren Buffett as the king of subsidies. And Elon, I don't know who Elon Musk's PR guy is, but this guy is a genius because everything Elon Musk does is gold. It's just amazing. He's an amazing guy, and he is incredible, and he's Tony Stark. And the thing is, first of all, it's important to point out that Tesla itself does not make money from selling cars. The company is solvent only because it sells carbon credits, and those were created purely through legislation. So essentially, they trade in a subsidy for carbon credits. That's what that is. And now they are announcing he's got this new battery company that he's building in, I don't remember which state, I think it's New Mexico. And of course, he got all kinds of tax deals and all sorts of subsidies to build the battery plant wherever, whatever state they build it in. And now he's announcing this incredible system that hooks up to solar power, and you're able to power your house off the grid with solar power and this new battery that he's making. So you have to get to the bottom of the story. You have to read almost to the end of the story because they find, this is in, of course, the Star, no, this was on KSDP, sorry. This is a KSDP story. You get all the way down to the bottom of the story, and they're doing a man-on-the-street interview with some guy who is an aerospace engineer, and it's always an engineer. These are always the people that buy this stuff. An aerospace engineer from California who, and I'm like, what? Took advantage of the state's incentives that sharply reduced the battery's $18,000 sticker price under a pilot program so that he only paid $7,500 for the thing. So here's another Elon Musk, brilliant Elon Musk idea that probably isn't workable without subsidies. And yet, all you hear about is how incredible this guy is. He is a leech. And so is Warren Buffett, who owns all these power companies and wind power and solar companies and everything else, which are all surviving on subsidies from state and federal governments. And then finally, I just want to do a whirlwind for you on a Monday of all these cool technological things that are coming. Been having a lot of conversations about we are so close. And I mentioned this in another podcast. We are so close to reaching a day when science will be able to reverse aging. Not just stop it, but reverse it. And it will change the world. I mean, it's really significant. And I saw this story over the weekend. This is in Time. Scientists discover the secret to keeping cells young. Talks about how they have developed a tool for repairing the DNA. And what it does is it repairs mistakes in the replication process, which is what causes when cells replicate and there are genetic mistakes in the cells, apparently, without, I don't want to sound like an idiot because I may have it wrong, that's one of the things that causes aging. And they believe that they have figured out a way to stop that. Now, we're quite some time away from a pill that will stop that or a treatment, but we're getting to the point where in any day they're going to come up with a plan. I mentioned the hands-free cars, which are outstripping the law in terms of dealing with it. And then I love this story because this is great. I talk a lot about 3D printing and robotics, and there was a story in on NBC News, of all places, you may have seen it, that talks about how small companies are now adopting robotics and 3D printing. I have at least one client that is doing amazing things with 3D printing right now, and it's one guy, and it talks about how small companies actually are benefiting from this new technology. So when you hear all this stuff about robotics and technology and how bad it is, and we have to worry about quote-unquote artificial intelligence. By the way, I met a scientist in California who told me we are many decades away from artificial intelligence even approaching the capability of a human being, let alone the creative capability and the emotional intelligence of human beings. So don't worry about that. I've often heard artificial intelligence explained to me as that which we can't do right now. So all of this fear of technology is based on people that, again, they are out there trying to gin up the outrage and the fear to get people to stop something that can't be stopped. I mean, computers are going to grow. We are going to have robotics. We are going to have more technology and tools. These are just tools that human beings build to do things. This is what we do. From the Conestoga, from the, you know, the wheel and the Conestoga wagon and, you know, the gun and fire and coal and everything else to computers that actually build things for us. These are tools that we build that make our lives better, and it will produce more jobs than you can imagine. I love these headlines that say things like, they're going to take all of our jobs away. Good. They should take all of our jobs away because they're going to create new jobs. How many people are employed these days as typewriter repairmen? Right? I mentioned the DNA stuff, and apparently now there's also a new DNA editing tool that allow people, scientists, and this is actually a serious question, to actually change the DNA in any organism, and then those changes will be passed on to the offspring. So there are things going on technologically that are really earth-shattering, and we end up arguing about stuff that has nothing to do with what's coming. You know, the world that is coming, to me, is far more interesting in many ways than the world that we are living in, and yet the world that we're living in is changing so fast, it's mind-boggling. So that's some stuff to think about for your Monday morning. Once again, thanks to xgovernmentcars.com for sponsoring this podcast, the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 364. Don't forget, they got a whole new selection of nicer, newer cars, the next-gen Fords, trucks, SUVs like Yukons, which he gets, and GMCs and Chevys and all that stuff. Great financing for all levels of credit. That means if you have good, bad, or ugly credit, you can get approved for financing to get a car. So let's quickly review cash deals from owner Ed Johnson, 3-day satisfaction guarantee, financing for all levels of credit. You can apply online safely now at xgovernmentcars.com 24/7 whenever you hear this in the podcast. And thanks, Ed, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Let's do the bullhorn one more time and wake up the neighbors. xgovernmentcars.com. Definitely want to thank Mad Case Studios for being the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcast, specializing in quality original automotive artwork. Click on the banners of all of the sponsors of the Bob Davis Podcast for more information on, especially Mad Case Studios. They're going to be at a lot of these antique car shows this year, and I'll give you more information about where Mad Case is going to be, as well as the podcast mobile command unit. So keep listening for info on that. Thanks to you guys for listening and finding us on Blog Talk Radio, also Stitcher.com, iTunes, or TuneIn, and thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, and thanks for liking, sharing, favoriting, and all that stuff on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for your donations at the Bob Davis Podcast, safely and securely using that big yellow donate button. All that money is being held up to be used for diesel fuel and for the mobile podcast command unit, and I am thinking about heading out again. I was so tired. I came home and made some coffee and slept for 3 days, and now I want to go again. So I'll figure out where we're going to go, and I'll let you guys know. But thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com for making that possible and making the next trip to cover a major news story possible as well. And thank you for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 364.